going to, if I get my mic on here.
There we go. Ooh, that's really loud. Scare everybody away here. Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order, and we'll start with a standing, a moment of silence, and we'll pledge the flag. Join me in a moment of silence. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have an agenda in front of us and also up on the screen. Is there any additions or changes to the agenda to see? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The agenda for this evening is approved. We have Student of the Month presentations. Mr. Sain.
Thank you, Mr. Yoder, members of the school board. It's my pleasure to introduce to you our September Students of the Month. Before I do that, however, I wanted to share with you a pretty cool experience that I had today. I had the opportunity to speak to a mother who immigrated from the Middle East to our area, and she I asked her in conversation how things were going here in the Elanco School District, and she was nothing but supportive in singing the school district's praises and that of the community, too. So special thanks to Dr. Hollister for setting up a culture and a climate within the school to have those kind of accolades, and to the school board members, because I know you guys are leaders in the community as well. So thank you. That fits nicely with our trait of the month, which is that of leadership. And I'm going to introduce to you this evening Liz Alvarez. Elizabeth Alvarez, if you wouldn't mind standing up, Liz. Liz is one of our all-stars at the high school. She is involved in a lot of different extracurricular activities, very musically inclined. She has a tremendous acting ability. Over the summer, we had done a safety bonanza here at the school, and she was part one of the student actors. And I mean, I almost got choked up just listening to her act. It was pretty phenomenal. So without further ado, Liz Alvarez, if you would mind going over to shake Dr. Hollister's hand. Liz is also a member of the chorus. She's been a member of the chorus all 4 years. She's a member of GSPA as well as marching band and the band concert band. She's been working at Yoder's over the course of the last 2 years. She does a lot with the children's theater for inner city students. And she is also the vice president of the class of 2017. She hopes to major in journalism and sociology in the future. So congratulations to Liz. And I do not see our male student of the month. His name is Douglas Kurtz. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like he can make it here tonight, but I'll be sure to have him go down to Dr. Hollister's office. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I too would like to make a comment. Thank you so much for your leadership and all that you do for our school. You're a role model for other kids and adults. Adults can learn from youngsters like yourself. So as a superintendent of schools, I want to say thank you, and I also want to call on you to keep up the good work. When we acknowledge students in public like this, it's saying thank you, but it's also saying we need more of you and more from you. So in some ways, it's a double, sort of a double-edged award. Part of it's saying good job, but the other part of it's saying don't stop now. So please keep it up. We really appreciate it. The other thing I'll say about the young man who can't be here, so many of these students have so much going on. We often have this problem where we can't get them to come and get an award from us because they're tied into so many things. So I'm sure he's busy doing something important other than being here with us just to say thank you for him. So thank you also to the parents, because I know it's not easy. Getting into the middle school years with my own daughter, we're running all the time. I thought I was going to have to do a pickup tonight at 6 o'clock and miss dinner, but my wife covered it, fortunately. So I know what that's about as well. So thank you very much for all your support.
Thank you.
All right. And then we move into our portion here where we have time set aside for residents of the school district that wish to address the board. Do we have anyone this evening? Okay. All right. Were there any others? All right. If you could come to the microphone and state your name and where you reside.
Good evening. I'm Art Weaver from out at 229 Maple Drive near the elementary school. I'm here tonight on behalf of the community to thank you sincerely for the efforts you put in to managing our school children and for all the hard work you do. Also, I'd like to offer up a prayer for the projects you have. May we pray. Our Father who art in heaven, the giver of all good gifts, we thank you tonight for your blessings. We thank you especially for our teachers, staff members, students, and ask that you bless them abundantly here tonight. Grant your guidance and courage, strength to the board members who have so willingly given of their time and talents in service to our community. We ask, Lord, you be with the deliberations and guide the decisions. Keep from short-sightedness and pettiness, and grant your insight and your wisdom into the projects. Dear Lord, we ask the school board might seek your will in all things, and then have the humility to follow through. All glory be to you, our Father God, now and always, through Christ and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, we have a special presentation this evening.
I want to introduce Greg Frederick. I hear from Greg periodically. Greg is the testing and assessment guru. Wears many hats for the school district, but one of the things he looks forward to the most every year is presenting the PSSA information.
Definitely.
Okay, there's a little bit of sarcasm. Greg knows the stuff inside and out, and he's the guy that gets to report all the information, the good, the bad, and the not so good. So I'm going to turn it over to Greg, and certainly, board members, this is an informal sort of setting. If you have questions along the way, please feel free to interrupt and ask the questions that you need to have answered. All right, Greg, tell
you. Right, good evening. Thank you for your time, and it's that time of year again. If you remember from last year, right around September, we start getting state testing results. The first batch of those results came out beginning of September, so that's what I'm here to share with you tonight. This is our achievement data. At the end of the month or beginning of October, we'll be getting our growth data, and I'm sure I'll be back again to share that with you as well. And then soon after that, we get our school performance profile scores for each of the schools. So it's kind of three waves of data that we get. This is the first wave, which is our achievement data. Just a quick note about achievement data versus growth data. The data that I'm sharing with you tonight is benchmark data, meaning it's kind of a result of one point in time when students take a test, whether or not they met the benchmark or didn't meet the benchmark. This kind of data is very highly correlated to demographics. You might have heard in the news that lower socioeconomic families or children tend to score lower on these achievement assessments since it's very correlated to demographics. However, on growth assessments, which we'll get to in October, there's no correlation to those kinds of demographics. So this is just how students performed based on the benchmark that the state's set for these tests that students take each year. The first thing I wanted to share, and I wanted you to focus on the first two sets. I did put all of the school information on. I'm not going to go into that into too much detail, but it's there for your information. The first two sets of data are the state information and then how our district compares to those state data. The colors on the graph that you see are just grade levels. The state reports out grade levels, not overall totals. So I broke it down into grade levels so you can kind of see which grade level, how grade levels perform compared to the state. So you can see for PSSA, this is grades 3 through 8. Our district scores are or achievement scores were higher than the state scores, which is typically the case. There are some variations among the buildings, but overall, it's a very similar pattern there to our district to what the state pattern is as far as grade levels. So the average for the state was about 60.5% proficient, and our district was about 65.8% proficient, so about 5 to 6 points higher than the state average in English and language arts.
Is that something that's remained consistent through the years? Is that not that percent higher than the state average?
Yeah, very, very similar. And again, the building information is there for your information. I'm not going to go into too much detail building level. The next slide is our math data for PSSA. Again, the first set of bars there is the state average for each grade level, and the second set is our district results. So you can see this is a little bit different than English language arts. For our district, we kind of have a reverse pattern of what's happening in the state, which we can hypothesize why that is. I'm not going to do that right now, but you can see that in each grade level, the achievement level at the state level is a little bit lower each year, whereas in our district, we seem to have an opposite pattern other than grade three was higher there compared to the others. So overall, the state results, about 42% of students scored proficient or better on the PSSA math in the state. And here at Elanco, about 51% scored proficient or higher on the state math test. And again, the building information is there for you to look at. Next, we have PSSA science, and this is a little bit different since the science exam is only given in grades 4 and 8, so we don't have the data for each grade level, but you can see here again, the color bars are grade 4 and grade 8. The first set here is the state scores, and then our district scores. And you can see both the 4th grade and 8th grade level, we performed better than the state, and overall, our average is about 10 points higher than the state average. Next, I'm going to shift to Keystone. Keystone exams are a little bit different than PSSA since they're given at the end of a course. So students who take, for example, Algebra 1, they take the state Keystone exam after that course. And the results are then banked until they're in grade 11. So what you're seeing here is the grade 11 cohort from last year, which would be our current 12th graders. Again, the first set of bars. Sorry about that. Nick, can you reset that? It's the second to last one. So the first set of bars are the state scores, and the second set are district scores. So you can see once again in Algebra 1, Biology, and Literature, our district scored higher than the state in those areas. And then you can see specifically at the bottom if you want to compare each of those subjects.
And some of our Algebra 1, would they be taken out in the ninth grade?
Correct. So I don't have the numbers for this current group, but this year 85 eighth graders took the Algebra 1 in eighth grade, so about a third of the students already have passed
right.
The Algebra 1.
It doesn't get reported, so they get to the 11th grade. But across the state, is that common, or is that
a... That I'm not aware of. Dr. Larkin, do you know if it's common if eighth graders take the assessment?
Or even ninth graders. I mean, is it...
Yes.
Is it common that algebra is in ninth grade? Yeah.
Ninth grade or
right.
Eighth grade?
Eighth or ninth grade.
It's about equal in our district, or in our county, some have the in eighth grade and some have it in ninth grade. And we were lucky enough to have them both.
Yeah,
so this year, 85 students took the Keystone exam in eighth grade. And then the last slide I have for you tonight is comparing 2014-15 to this year within our district. And comparing the difference between last year and this year, very similar to what the state trend was. The different color bars are the different subjects. For example, the first bar is English language arts, then math, science, algebra, biology, and literature. So comparing 2015 to 2016, for example, in ELA, in 2015, about 65.3% of students were proficient or higher. This year, 65.8. So it was a slight increase, about not quite a percent increase in that. Math, about 48% were proficient last year in our district. This year, 51%. The state also had a 3-point increase in math overall, so we were right in line with that. Science stayed very similar, 76% again. And again, at the state level, it was 0.1% difference, so we were, again, right in line with that. Algebra, 68.5 to 69.4. The state went up 4 points. We went about 1.5 points. Keystone biology, about 70% to about 73%. So that's a 3-point increase from the cohort that took the exam last year. And then finally, literature, 79% to 82%. So again, another 3-point increase. So in each, even though some of the subjects, it's a slight increase in each of the subjects, there was an increase of proficiency, even though a thing to remember that it is different students, but overall, we did have an increase in achievement in each area overall. So does anyone have any questions about the overall results or any of the school information?
The only one that jumps out is the math there between that, you know, like for Brecknock and DeHolland, you guys compared to Blue Ball. What's 20-point difference?
Yeah,
in which grade level?
Grade five. That's
45.
Huge.
Yeah.
38.
Yeah, there's some outliers. Do we ever look at comparing, like, just that would be interesting to know, like, what the class sizes were versus
we could compare that
versus
again.
What the scores are. It'd just be interesting to see if there's any trend there. It didn't happen to get a recovery.
One thing that in October when we get our growth data, this compares different groups of students. That will compare students to themselves and how much
right,
and the improvement you have to.
So we will be looking at all this data once we get it all here.
Sure.
And we will have Mr. Frederick back to give us further
so
analysis.
In October, it'll all be put together in the SPP, the school performance profile, so we'll look at it again then. Great, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Also keep in mind, and I would like to see higher achievement scores, but keep in mind in the last 7 years our pretty reduced lunch numbers have doubled, and that does impact us significantly. There's a lot of criticism about the standardized test scores and how achievement is directly related to the poverty level, as Greg said initially. There's a lot of truth to that. And that's why the SPP has come under so much fire, because there was so much of the SPP calculation based on PSSA achievement. The new SPP scores will be more favorable to our school district because they're backing off on the percentage of achievement and looking more at what many consider a more important number, and that's the growth piece. We don't have the growth piece yet. We'll get that next month, we hope. So keep that in mind. The other thing to keep in mind is that PSSA test itself has become increasingly difficult each of the last several years. So while our progress looks stagnant to some degree, there's an upward trend, but not as much as I would like to see. I think students are performing as a whole better than ever based on the fact that they have more challenges and they have more difficult information. For those of you who were able to attend my opening address to the faculty, I know Mr. Yoder was there, I took a test from 10 years ago and showed the questions. The questions were from the 10th grade assessment that we used to give, and they were far more easy than the 8th grade tests that we give now in mathematics. If anyone would like to see that, I can pull it out. But it's fascinating to see what questions were used previously to evaluate our operation compared to today. Honestly, the 8th grade, the 8th grade test questions in math, I had difficulty coming up with the answer, to be very honest. So it's fascinating that some people, want to say that public education is failing, but I would challenge them with some pretty hard data that in many ways it's not. Thank you. More to come.
All right, very good. Thank you for that report, and we will continue monitoring that as more information comes in, as well as do. We have the consent agenda then in front of us, and these are issues that things we discussed last week at the meeting. We put on the consent agenda, so we voted as one. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
And a second?
Yes, indeed, second.
Any discussion or questions on the consent agenda this evening? And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The consent agenda has passed. We have two action items that we'll vote on separately. Dr. Hauser, I think, wants to do a little more explanation on.
Yeah, if you recall, thank you, Mr. These are two policies that we want to update. They're let me do one at a time. Policy 801, we're only changing one single line of that policy. Typically, when we do policies, we have sort of a 5 or 6 weeks turnaround. We have them as information items in the first month, and then the next month we move them to action. Because the change is so small and really is an attempt to address level to a concern of the auditor, it was a mention, I forget the term it is, regarding our right to know policy. I would like to just do it right away. So that's policy 801. The second one is a nepotism policy that I'd like to see us put into place. And again, because that policy is so short and pretty straightforward, I felt that I was comfortable bringing it to you immediately. Again, this is a recommendation of the audit team that was in. Not a finding, but a suggestion, at the suggestion level. So I think it would be nice for us to be able to tell the audit team, look, we already have this done. So again, I'm recommending this. So it's two separate action items, A and B. If you also recall from last week, there was another policy on financial interests. We're holding that one because it's a lot more complicated, a lot more to it, and we'll have that one for action next month.
All right. Was there any questions? Hopefully everybody got to review that. The first one is just on page 3 there. It's redlined, the addition, and then on the nepotism. I think we've already have always conducted with that policy, at least if not officially, but apparently we followed that. We're not going to vote on somebody who is a family member. If there's no other questions on that, then I guess I would look for a motion to approve action item A.
So moved.
Second, Brian. Second. Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That's approved. And then we would need a motion for action item B, the nepotism policy. approve.
Second.
Second, Brian. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That passes as well. Thank you for that. We have reports. Lancaster County Tax Collection Bureau, Mr. Ramsey.
Yes, we did meet on September 14th. The majority of our meeting was to hear the Service Organization Control Audit Report, formerly referred to as the SOC report that I reported on previously. The main reason for that report is to really go through the controls and procedures of the Tax Bureau from the money coming in until it's dispersed to the school districts. I'm happy to report that the Bureau continues to maintain strong procedures and controls in that regard to safeguard our money and taxpayer money. We also received information that our non-filer mailing, for those, that would be for tax year 2015, those individuals that did not file a tax return, and also the PA Department of Revenue, we do a data comparison. We take a look at those that filed for the state tax compared to those that filed for the earned income tax. They do a comparison, and then they send out a mailing for any discrepancies. That, unfortunately, of data, so that's a 2014 tax year. So we've had a lot of success through those mailings. So I hopefully will have more report on once as the process moves down and we start getting responses back. Our current executive director plans to retire at the end of the 2017 calendar year. So we're currently in the process of doing a search for a new executive director. Our hopes is to have new candidate for approval and put in place by July 1 of 2017. So we have about 6 months with the current executive director before he retires. And our next meeting is November 16th, and that will mostly be about the 2017 outlook.
Right. Any questions on the tax collection? Lancaster Lebanon IU 13.
The IU board met September 14th. One of the meeting highlights was we were shown a slide presentation of the upgrades to the Community School West, which the IU rents from Mannheim School District. We approved $15.5 million in disbursements. We approved 6 new business service contracts, new or additions to existing business service contracts. We approved 9 new or additions to existing early childhood and special education service contracts. We approved 16 new or additions to existing instructional service contracts. We approved 7 new or additions to existing technology service contracts, and 1 new human resource service contract. We had 30 resignations, 7 terminations of employment, 2 retirements. We hired 73 new employees. We had 50 change of position or salary status and granted 4 leave of absences. A highlight for anyone who knows anyone, October 3rd, the IU 13, both at Lebanon and Lancaster, will have a job fair specifically tailored towards substitute teachers for not only the IU but also the local boards. So if you know anyone who's looking to do any substitute teaching, it's a perfect place to go and see what you can do and what the IU will do to help you in getting that whatever you need and whatever help you need to be able to substitute teach. And a side note is we also have a PSBA board election. The election slate that we were given has 1 candidate for each open position. I talked to our local PSBA board member, and she assured me that all of the people who are on the slate vote for are very good people, but they were a bit disappointed that they didn't have more of a selection, as I believe it's 5 offices and there's 5 people running. So hopefully we can, as a board, vote on that. And if anyone has any questions, I will take them now, or at any time in the future, you can contact me and I'll answer to the best of my ability.
How do we take action on that as a board?
I have that right here, part of my report. What I'd recommend, based on Mr. Urban's information, is that you vote to approve the president-elect, the vice president, and the five folks who apply for regional leadership. You can do that as, I would imagine, you can do that as a vote of one vote for all the candidates, since there's only one position available, one person running for two positions.
Just a vote to approve the slate.
Approve the slate of candidates. The board does need to take a vote on that. There needs to be a motion that needs to be recorded in the minutes. We need to take action on that. And like I said, based on Mr. Irwin's recommendation, I would support that.
Is there a motion to approve the slate of officers for the PSBA?
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That slate is approved. Any other questions for the Mr. Lutman, item 13 report? Thank you, Mr. Redman. That Lancaster CTC, Mrs. Redman.
Okay. The JOC met on August 25th, and I gave you a little handout because what had happened last year with enrollments, I don't remember, Dr. Alex, do you remember how many extra applications they had over their...
I want to say there are 200 over full.
I think it was...
200 over full.
Yes, I think it was at least 150 at one count. There were more applications than they had places to take students. And it was to the tune of 150 to 200 more applications than places to take students. So there is obviously more interest in attending the CTC than they currently have places. So last spring, the mad scramble to try to figure out how to fix that, you'll see there were some 2016 program solution updates. They thought of taking no ninth graders, just 10th and 11th graders into the cluster programs, which is just the half day introductory programs. And they did that last year. They said, I'm sorry, we can't take any ninth graders. Some of the other ideas were to operate the health care cluster programs for both AM and PM. Instead of just, there's an AM at some of the campuses, a PM, depending on which sending districts go to which schools and how the schedule fits. They were not able to accomplish that last year because there were scheduling conflicts. They were trying to do it in the spring, and schedules were already set for everybody, so they could not accommodate schedules. The other option was that HAC has empty classrooms at their facility and had offered to the CTC to run the Intro to Health program there. They did not do that again last spring due to scheduling conflicts, and some of the parents had concerns about their children traveling to the HAC campus instead of a CTC campus, and trying to change all of that, kind of what would have been at the last minute last spring to set up for this fall, that was not possible. So there were still not all the students got in. Trying to be proactive and look ahead, the next set of information that you have here on this handout, some of the secondary program possible options for next year would be to operate the health care, the cluster programs, both AM and PM sessions at all campuses. Having them open and enrolling students for both, not trying to change kind of at the last minute, but making that the way the program is set up and the way the program is set up to be enrolled for. It would require the elimination of Intro to Health from each campus because of the space, and the like. Looking at the idea again of running the Intro to Health program at HAC, using the ability to have classroom space there. I can't remember the details, but I know HAC had a really nice deal in terms of you know, getting the foot in the door and not terribly expensive, and because they have space that's going wanting. it would require that agreement with HAC, and it would require the hiring of two new teachers. So it would be an increased expense to the budget, to the tune of about $200,000. But in planning to do it then, students who enroll for that program know it's going to be at the HAC campus. Parents will know when their child signs up for that program that it is going to be at the HAC campus. So it won't be a middle of the stream kind of change. Another idea is to revise the name. Each name and each course has a certain number, and you can revise them at to certain, but to revise the name and to operate the Precision Metals program at Mountjoy campus, that would require the purchase of equipment, the hiring of one new teacher, and there's listed the equipment expense for you and the budget increase that it would take. And then, you know, the idea is to discuss and the need for any special education related career programs with the district. The CTC is really looking for the sending board's input as to what direction we would need to take, or, you know, what if any of these are, you know, yeah, that sounds interesting, let's pursue that, or if you have any real concerns that I can make a note of that I make sure I take back to the JOC. At the bottom are some possible secondary ed options. The post-secondary ed, the adult ed is really growing, and so they're looking at some more degree programs and trying to filter that in. In terms of budget, those programs do help to feed the budget for the entire program. One of the reasons that the CTC is really looking for input from sending districts is this budget piece. It's going to add to the budget, which means they're going to be asking for more money, because that's what it. If we're going to have more students, it's going to take more money to run it. So that's why I wanted you to have it in writing so you can look at it and see it. And you know, I don't need any concrete ideas tonight, but so that you know that they are looking for feedback, and we will be looking for feedback. Registration begins, let's see, open house, I think, is mid-October. So registration, did they say registration begins?
Yeah. Registration begins in October.
So they are looking to, you know, this fall we need to decide exactly which of these options we're going to take. So they are within, you know, not necessarily tonight, but by next month, by our next month meeting, I will need to have some concrete things for the October JOC, which will be the fourth Thursday of October 27th will be the JOC meeting. So that's what I have to report, and that's what the JOC is kind of leaning towards. So any discussion or any questions, I'll try to fill it in. The superintendents got kind of the same information at their meeting. I don't know if you gleaned any other insights or how was the superintendent's leading?
It was a long discussion. But before I prejudice the board, I would be curious to know if there is any immediate feedback from board members before I discuss sort of what the superintendents are thinking.
Well, my thoughts on the entry to health program and experience with that. My daughter had done that. It was an excellent program. But to me, having it at HAC, as far as the location, I mean, I don't really think that should be a major concern. It's very centrally located in the county. We have students who were doing programs in Willow Street, which is much farther. And, you know, we certainly wanted the school district to be farther away.
And so that would make sense. I think if parents know it up front that it's going to be held at HAC, plus they also do, they do a lot like with the hospital, they do trips and things, they'd actually be closer to the hospital. So that, to me, that makes sense. If we can utilize space at a reasonable cost, that we don't, that, that they don't have to build more classrooms, you know, that seems like a good use of resources to me. And I guess we would require hiring new teachers because we would be taking on more students. I guess I'm not quite understanding why hiring, why we have, would we have to hire if we're just moving the program?
Well, it would be enlarging the program.
Okay, it'd be enlarging.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Yes, it would be being able to enlarge to be able to take some more students.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have any problem with that. Support that. Other thoughts?
The superintendent group did discuss this at length, and we really pulled it around. At the end of the meeting, several of the conclusions and thoughts, and again, it wasn't as Melissa said, or Mrs. Redmond said, not a final decision, but the feeling of the superintendents was a couple of things. Number one, we wanted to make sure that the registration wasn't an apparition. The CTC has worked very hard the last 2 years to get its message out of what it's all about, and we think that's helped. The CTC conducted orientation sessions for counselors and certain teachers, and is going to continue to do that. And there is a belief that that made a big difference in the registration numbers. But we also want to make sure that we don't overbuild and in a year or two see a drop off of participation. So there's a little bit of caution. We don't want to overreact to this sudden interest in the CTC. We hope it's a permanent interest. The CTC is an awesome start for kids, as you've heard me say on many occasions, as well as Mrs. Redmond and before her, Deb, oh, what's that company?
Reimers,
thank you. Sorry. I seem to forget. Of course, Mrs. Reimers was a huge fan of the CTC and promoted it as well. It is a great start for kids. Superintendents also felt that while the healthcare program is a strong need in the county. I just heard from the HR director from LGH at a learning session a couple of weeks ago. We also believe that LGH is actually meeting that need. LGH is starting programs that will have kids go right there and bypass the CTC. So in effect, the students are still being served, and it's not costing the school districts any real money. So we're going to let the LGH play the lead on the healthcare piece, at least for now. The one area that the superintendents did feel was important, and because a number of us are hearing the same thing, the sole concept of precision metals is enormous. We have folks out there, companies who absolutely cannot find skilled craftsmen in a precision machining shop. At the same meeting that I was attending where I heard the LGH HR person spoke, the vice president for High Steel, in charge of human resources, was present, as well as the president of Thaddeus Stevens Technical School. Thaddeus Stevens, he cited several examples where the students who are going into these kinds of programs already have jobs lined up before they take their first class at Thaddeus Stevens. Before they take their first class, they have been offered jobs, because of the reputation that Thaddeus has, but also because of the need. And that requests are coming from all over the country, not just locally. So superintendents have heard this message from a number of different folks and decided to support the investment in the precision metals concept with the additional thought that some additional revenue could be achieved in the adult program, and cost savings could be achieved because of some things they're doing in consolidating at the adult program, the programs that are already in existence. You've heard the commercials advance from CTC and the truck driving school. Our current CTC has truck driving schools, 5 of them now, and they're all over the state, not just in this county. So they've reached out and are bringing revenue in the adult program that they then use to defer costs for our own kids and all the schools here. So we've asked them to invest a little more in that,
to see if we can't reduce the investment that it would take for the precious metal program. So at this point, that's the one area that we did share with the administrators at the CTC that we really wanted to see them move forward and investigate very seriously if that was possible.
And I will defer on that because I did think at the time with Pennsylvania College of Health Sciences opening that beautiful building that they did, that they may have space there too, and I was thinking that would be so. So that makes sense. If that's being met in a different way, that's great. But it is.
Yeah. That's a we had a really strong discussion. There are some school boards, school districts who are still in extreme financial distress in this county, and they had much more to say about expanding any programs. They were more vocal about any kind of expansion. Fortunately, we're coming through that a little bit better here at this point in time, but we do have to recognize and understand that we're part of the team as far as the county's concerned and the CTC. All the districts work together, so it's always a little bit of working back and forth till the group can come up with a solution that meets everyone's needs, and that's where we landed. So I'm sensing from you folks that works pretty well for an investigation.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, I'm hearing it out there with being involved somewhat in the building industry, that, you know, the trades are really hurting for employees, electricians, plumbers, people, landscaping, construction, all those things. This is the CTC. Maybe that has something to do with the increase in enrollment too, because there's a lot of jobs out there. If they have any training at all, they can get pretty good jobs. So that's great. And with the cost of college.
Well, and that's a key factor in all this today.
Right. Any other questions or comments? Are you finished?
That's my report.
Okay. Any
other feedback? Any
CTC? I think, you know, going forward, their students are going to be very much in demand, and you know, a strong supporter of that as well. So, legislative, Mr. Wenzel.
Yes. For those of you that could have been present here last week, Representative Dave Zerwin was present here to take questions last week. He's one of the two representatives that for our school district, Mark Gillen being the other as the Brecknock Township area. One of the things Representative Zerwin stated, and it's obvious this is an election year, so there won't be a whole lot going on up in Harrisburg as far as bills being passed and everything, and we hope to have him back early next year to see how the State House and Senate looks after the election and take it from there. One piece of Act 70, 2014, being a history buff that I am, the Department of Education is working on, that deals with things the school district will have to teach about the Holocaust and human rights. And I can't stress how crucial, we all know, is time grows distance between the Holocaust and all the sacrifices made in human rights areas around the world. We tend to forget what sacrifices countries made and individuals made to make this world a better place. So I hope they come up with a good curriculum, I should say, rules or whatever you want to call it, protocol, I guess, to follow, or suggestions in the district to follow, to have our students have a grasp of what happened not too many years ago, but many years ago, to help us educate our students better. And of course, like I said, with this being the election year, won't be a whole lot happening up in Harrisburg until next year, so that's about it for the legislative, unless Bob has anything to add to that.
All right, thank you, Tom, for keeping us up to speed on some of the things that are going on there, and we'll move into the superintendent's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. We took care of the PSBA election. Thank you. The second item I had, I need to correct myself from last week. I gave you bad information regarding our enrollment. I was looking at the wrong year. We are actually right where we're supposed to be in terms of the Pell study. I had indicated that the high school was up 30, and that's not true. They are right, they're within three of where they were predicted to be from the Pell. I read last year's report instead of this current report. So overall, the district is short about 20 students compared to where Pell predicted us to be. And Pell also predicts that this is the bottom for us, that we will start picking up students again, which does make some sense as we look at some potential housing developments. All that to say that we have room for kids. We have actually plenty of room for kids at this point. But as I mentioned last week, two things. We'll have our official October enrollment numbers next month that really are the ones that we base everything on. And then I would recommend that we do an update of Pell, perhaps this spring, just to keep that data fresh. They can do an update without doing the full-blown report, just to keep an eye on some of the developments that are starting to get moving. With the economy turning, I think they're going to start building some houses in the area. So we do want to keep track of that. The next thing I have is, if you recall, Sarah Fritz from the VA's office was here 2 months ago. She's newly appointed. It's a newly created position for the VA, in part to help schools with addressing their drug and alcohol abuse and the needs of communities. I'm pleased to announce that I've been working with the VA's office through Sarah, as well as Representative Zimmerman's office through Priscilla Eberle. And we are going to have a community forum on this on December 7th, this December, here on the campus. More information to follow, but it looks like it will be a presentation of a number of different folks, including the DA himself, plans to be here to make some comments and actually present some pieces of information. There is an alarming concern over heroin abuse, as you've been reading in the papers. It is exploding. And I think there are some folks who are extremely nervous about us just beginning to see that problem come up in communities. So I expect that that evening will be a number of different presenters in combination with the VA, but I'll give you some more information. The other thing that we met and discussed already was our target audience is going to be much broader than it has been in the past. We, in the past, have pretty much focused on parents. We're going to go after the whole community, including members of Garden Spot Village, because it's seniors who are having their prescription medication taken by family members at times. And so we really do want to try to include all aspects and facets of our community in the outreach that we put together. So again, put that on your calendar, December 7th, it'll be here at Garden Spot. More information specifically about what that evening will look like to follow. The last item I have is it's just a little piece of information. From time to time, there are questions and requests that I use the district emergency dialing system to report school closings or weather-related issues. Some of the other school districts in the area do that. They use the emergency dialer and report power delays or power dismissals and those kinds of things. I've always resisted that, and that's been my decision based on the fact that I don't think all people want those calls early in the morning. I know in my particular school district there were some issues where we got repeated calls over and over again, and continued to wake up some of the people who wanted to still sleep. That would not be me, but there are other members of the family who had to answer that phone. For those weather emergencies. The other thing is I really have always felt that using the emergency dialer system just for emergencies was important to signal the fact that it's an emergency. When weather's coming in, I think it's pretty obvious that weather's coming in. Everyone talks about it for days, so people should be, in my opinion, paying attention to that. Having said that, some additional information solidifies my position on that. We just found out from our tech legal pool that we use that there are school districts now being sued for making incorrect dials to homes. So for example, if someone gives you a phone number and then they change their phone service and don't tell you, and then that phone number gets put back into service and you call that phone number, it's a $4,000 fine every time, no, $3,000 fine every time you get that number. There's a school district in suburban Philadelphia being sued for $12,000 because a person got emergency phone calls on four separate occasions. So this is a ruling that comes down from the FCC, and the FCC was requested to take away the ruling on the wrong number dial and refused to do it. They did, however, make a ruling that that things that are closely related to the mission of the school may be used for those automatic dialing phone calls, but even that, you need to be careful if you're advertising for things. They must be mission related to the school district, or you could be fined for that as well. So they've really tightened up that dialing piece. Automatic dialers, again, it's the push and pull of the robo calls that we all get from time to time. But I just thought that was interesting that if we would dial a wrong number and that number was in service, we would in fact be fined. So just a little bit of information. It's been my choice to not use it in that way, but this is one more piece of information that would keep me so inclined. Any questions on that piece? The last thing I have is I need to announce an executive session immediately following this meeting regarding personnel matter and performance. And that concludes my report.
All right, thank you. Any questions for the superintendent's report? Any other comments or announcements for the board members? All right, then we look for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. We are adjourned.